We've welcomed over from the Department of Plant Pathology here at Kansas State University an individual whom we've visited with before in the broadcast before his arrival here at K-State. He is now the curator of what's called the Fungal Genetics Stock Center here at K-State. We'll tell you what that is about and its importance to production agriculture. Kevin McCluskey is with us. Kevin, it's our first chance to revisit with you since you joined the faculty here at Kansas State. So remind folks a bit of your background, and then we'll talk about the center which you oversee.
Thanks, Eric. I'm the curator of a collection called the Fungal Genetic Stock Center. I've been curator of the collection since 1995, and this is our third institutional home. I joined the collection in 1995 when it was at KU Med Center, although it didn't have a medical mandate. We moved in 2004 when the director retired, and then again in 2014 when the NSF, the U.S. National Science Foundation, changed their support for living collections. K-State was very generous in offering a home for the FGSC, and I was happy to join the faculty in a department that brings me back to my roots. My original doctorate was in plant pathology, and I'm happy to be in the plant path department here at an ag school again.
So it's a perfect fit, really, for plant pathology here at K-State and your work.
It is a perfect fit. You know, the Fungal Genetic Stock Center has supported plant pathology and plant microbe interactions research for many decades. The main organisms in the collection are all plant-associated environmental microbes. And for me, it's nice because I get to be a wildcat again. It's the third time I've been a wildcat.
Good to have you back. But in more definitive terms, what is the Fungal Genetics Stock Center?
So the Fungal Genetics Stock Center is literally a research resource repository. It's a repository of resources that you use in research. So this can be living microbe strains. It can be molecular tools such as gene libraries or clone genes. And these are materials that we distribute to clients in the U.S. and around the world. They go to our website at fgsc.net, and they can identify the materials they want through a variety of searches. And then they can get those materials from us directly. These are materials that individuals, other researchers, have developed as part of their research, and they either just want to share them out of altruism, or they're retiring or moving on to another area of inquiry. And so they make these materials available to the public for increased impact.
Are they largely or exclusively crop-oriented fungi, or is it beyond that?
It goes beyond that. We have strains that you can apply to plants and inhibit their ability to produce toxins, so-called Aflagard-type strains. We have strains that are molecular testers to figure out what population of fungi are infecting your plants. We have strains that have had toxin gene deletion, so you can understand the role of toxins in causing things like head scab on wheat.
Mm-hmm. You say, Kevin, that microbes are the hot topic right now in terms of improving plant health. You might elaborate.
Sure. Microbes are a hot topic. So we understand now that microbes are part of a healthy plant environment. The Fungal Genetic Stock Center has engaged with the Phytobiomes Initiative to promote the idea that microbes can be partners in producing healthy crop plants. Well, certainly Neurospora is known now to be an endophyte, and it may be a pathogen of certain kinds of plants under certain conditions, although it's most commonly seen in the environment just at growing on dead plant material. Well, we certainly know about rhizobia that increase the ability of plants to grow without nitrogen fertilizer. Fungal endophytes, fungi that live within plants, can increase their resistance to drought stress, can increase their resistance to salinity, can expand the range of temperatures at which this plant will grow productively. And so we're learning about how to use specific microbes and not just rely on natural colonization.
So really, the scientific community is on the early edge of what microbes can provide in the way of enhancing crop plant health in particular.
Yeah, in certain areas. So there's another collection at West Virginia called the International VA Mycorrhizal Fungal Collection, INVAM for short, and they provide mycorrhizal fungi. These are not research organisms. They're used in production agriculture, and we're very lucky that this collection exists because it allows people to specifically introduce microbes and not just rely on what happens to be in the environment, and specifically they introduce microbes that they know will promote plant health and plant growth.
An exciting field, it sounds.
It's very exciting right now. One of the challenges we face is that we want these materials to be in the public domain. We want people to have free access to them, and we don't want to get into a situation where you only can get them from large corporate interests whose motivation may not be well aligned with your own.
One of the things we did want to convey in our visit here is something you hinted at earlier, but it's worth reiterating and emphasizing that there is a huge importance of culture collections to not only production agriculture, but a broad spectrum of other important causes, right? Mm-hmm.
Sure. There's been some studies that have shown that if you share your research resources through a public collection, the impact is more than twofold higher. So that means you get twice as many other people using your materials. You know, Google says we stand on the shoulders of giants. And we like to think that culture collections are helping to build those giants. A group of people can stand on each other's shoulders and then you can see farther.
Mm-hmm. They really are the foundation of high achievements in science broadly and to crop production advances narrowly.
Absolutely. When you're using shared materials, you know what they are. When you get them from a culture collection, they're vouched for. They have quality control. They are exactly what they're supposed to be. We enable people to make exact comparisons. So you've heard of apples to apples. Well, you go out in the environment and you may be making apples to crabapple comparisons. Right. And we want people to make pippin to pippin or delicious to delicious. So you're making the exact comparison that you intend to make. And you get more out of your research investment that way. That's another important thing about collections. You know, the government invests in a tremendous amount of research and we make that research go farther. We share it. We allow people to use materials from previous generations. And so the investment that is made in research goes farther.
Well, obviously, the Fungal Genetic Stock Center, not the only operating center in the country. And that leads us to something that you are embarking on now. And this is on the strength of a National Science Foundation grant, you say, that you'll be deeply involved in. This is a research coordination initiative. What's that about?
So I'm the principal investigator of an NSF grant for a community of culture collections. We call it the U.S. Culture Collection Network, and it's available online to everyone at usccn.org. This effort has been going for a few years now, and one of the remarkable things that we've accomplished is bringing culture collection workers to other collections. So there's about 20 active public collections in the U.S., and prior to the establishment of this RCN grant, most collection curators had never been to a collection other than their own.
Which is really interesting.
It's important to see how other people do the same sorts of things. Since we've had this grant, now we've held meetings at 5 major culture collections. We've helped collections establish off-site backup with the USDA in Fort Collins. And we've engaged more deeply with the international culture collection community. The FGSC, along with the other culture collections in the U.S., are part of an organization called the World Federation for Culture Collections, and it exists largely unseen. There's over 700 member collections of the WFCC, and these support research around the world. In terms of impact, very few entities have ever had the kind of impact that the culture collections that make up the WFCC have had, and I'm going around saying that the WFCC should have a Nobel Peace Prize for their impact.
They've been behind the scenes of such tremendous advances.
Sure, you have things like the distribution of strains for producing antibiotics, especially penicillin in the 1940s, the availability of strains for the polymerase chain reaction. And I mentioned to you earlier that even the strains that were used for the demonstration of the new CRISPR-Cas technique had their origins in the E. coli Stock Center at Yale University.
So in organizing this coordination, the hope is that obviously knowledge will be exchanged between the centers, learning from your peers, and perhaps expediting the process of advances and genetic material development and distribution. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, Eric. And we're at a bit of a nexus right now. We're at a turning point for culture collections. Many of the historically NSF-supported collections are losing their funding because the NSF has limited resources. Medical collections have support through the NIH, and some agriculturally relevant collections are supported through the USDA, but there's no even support. So a collection that was developed through researchers' efforts can't become a USDA collection. And when that researcher retires or moves on, the collection may be lost forever. So one of the important things that the U.S. Culture Collection Network is doing is advocating for support for culture collections. We're looking at things like having journal editors require an accession number for microbes that are described in research so that an individual who reads that paper who wants to repeat that project can go out and get the exact same strains. We're advocating that universities have a mandate to preserve the materials that are generated through government-supported research so that they can increase the impact of the research that was done at their institutions. These are all straightforward things that have been done in other communities. You know, if you publish a gene sequence now, you're required to deposit it. We think that microbe strains should have the same requirements so that they're increasingly available, so that the government investment in research is not just to the, you know, the initial group, but it's shared widely and these materials are available for other people to use. Yeah.
Well, it sounds by all means to be an important undertaking, and we wish you well with that. In the meantime, we also wish you good progress with the Fungal Genetics Stock Center here at Kansas State, as it's been relocated here to this university, and sounds like you've got it well-grounded here at K-State, Kevin.
I think we do. We found a strong home in the Department of Plant Pathology, and we're particularly grateful to Dean John Flores for his vision in recognizing the value of the Fungal Genetics Stock Center and bringing it to Kansas State in 2014.
It's good to have this work here at Kansas State, and we'll likely be talking with you in the future about other things that the center has undertaking and providing in the way of support for advanced research, Kevin. Thank you for coming over. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity to share.
He is the curator of the Fungal Genetics Stock Center within the Department of Plant Pathology here at K-State. That's Kevin McCluskey.